Today we're kicking off the Human Race series. My name is Stephanie. I'm one of the pastors here with Jacob's Well. And we're beginning a three-week series that we're calling Human Race. And I think just as a little setup, I had a friend visiting and she was asking me, she's like, how come you don't always preach on the Bible? And Greg was there and he was like, well, can I ask you a question? Like, how often did Jesus preach on the Bible? And she was like, huh. But he was like, Jesus saw what was happening in front of him and spoke to that. And to me, that's very much what this series is. This is something that we know we need to talk about. And maybe if you're like me, you feel like you don't quite know how to talk about it, but that you should. So this is very much in the Jacob's Well wheelhouse of norming difficult conversations and giving us some tools to have these difficult conversations so that when we are Jacob's Well out in the world, we are equipped to do this. So, with that being said, let's jump in. Aren't you excited? I'm a little nervous, I'm going to tell you, but I think it's going to be great. So, I think for what is so fundamental about this conversation for me are these first couple of sentences that are on your fill-in. Oh, and I just want to say, I know there's not a lot of, like, blank space on here, but I hope you find room to take a lot of good notes. There was just a lot to put on here. So hopefully this is meaningful for us this week. But so those first couple fill-ins, we are not the same, and we are not separate. Like, we come to this conversation with the fundamental belief that we are all connected and that we are all different. We're all different and we're all connected. Maybe that was how I filled in the second one. And so we're not going to talk about denying our differences or just how much we're all the same, because we aren't the same. But that doesn't mean that we're separate. And just because we're different doesn't mean we're not connected to each other. And I think we see in Jesus an amazing example of his connectivity. He was a connector. He was a person that brought people together, literally, usually around the table, which is why we have some tables scattered around the room today, of bringing all kinds of people, really elite, high-class people like the Pharisees, people that would have been mired in other people's judgments, like prostitutes or tax collectors, and didn't say, see, you're all the same. You're just the same. But he was like, you can all be friends. Like, you all need to be at this table together. And so that is the example that I think is really modeling for us how we want to approach this, how we want to start thinking about this. And as Monday, you know, was Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It's a mouthful, but and he had this great quote that's up there, and it's a lot of words, so I'll read it to you. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. We are tied together in the single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. And whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the way God's universe is made. This is the way it is structured. And I think that just helps us set the tone of mutuality and understanding, because we are bound up together. But race right now in our country is something that divides us. And it's really messy, and it starts with knowing ourselves. So let me tell you a little bit about where we're going with the whole series, and then we'll, just to put it all in context, and then we'll jump into today. So today, we're talking about identity and our own race, and let me give you the three-sentence version of today. You will be uncomfortable, and that's good. Don't deny differences. What's your race? There, that's the whole message. We can go. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about the difference between being non-racist and anti-racist. Sort of the idea that there's no passive way to be part of the solution today. So how we can start to be more proactive about what we see and experience. And then the last week is really about freedom and hope for the world. And so as I see this, we're starting at a very micro level of understanding ourselves and then sort of building to a more macro level of how we do that in our relationships and how we do that in the world. So that's where this is all going. So today, the first thing we need to talk about is we need to talk about safe spaces. And to me, this is a really natural lead-in from Inside Out into this conversation of how we do difficult things, how we handle difficult emotions, right? So you will not always feel comfortable, but you can feel safe. And so this, a lot of my thoughts around this come from a wonderful author and speaker named Verne Myers. She has a great book called What If I Say the Wrong Thing? She has TED Talks. She's been on NPR recently a couple times. It's been great. A lot of people have been sending us resources. And this was a link that got sent to us a couple times, her NPR stuff. So Verne Myers says, we won't always feel comfortable, but we can feel safe. And I think that's important because this is really a journey and it takes courage. And so these are tools to help. And I want to say, if you weren't here last week, that's okay, but if you were, I heard from some folks like, I still don't understand productive anger, right? Okay, this is it's right here. Because remember we were talking about that reactivity, like when your head starts on fire from inside out, and he's like, and he's just like super upset about everything. That reactivity is rarely, if ever, helpful. Just blowing your lid, right? And can you see how here in these conversations, if you just blow your lid and start yelling at somebody that said something unhelpful, like, what are they going to do? Shut down. Are they going to be like, well, actually, oh, help me learn. Help me understand what I did wrong now that you've yelled at me. I'm really interested in this. Right? Like, nobody's going to do that. But, like we said with anger, if you can use insight to get to what anger is really caring about, that reactivity, oh gosh, you guys, I'm getting too excited. That reactivity comes from caring.
We have an opportunity to fix this.
All right.
We're getting less of feedback.
Okay. I have my people work on this. I do sometimes feel like Britney Spears or something with this on. For you listening to the podcast, we're having mic issues. All right, so, but we talked about insight being what transforms anger because anger cares very deeply. And so when you see those people blowing up at somebody, maybe in a conversation when somebody said something unhelpful about race, if you can get to the insight, if you can get to the caring behind it, it can be really transformative because it needs to be shared. If you see anger, if you're angry about injustices, the goal isn't to do nothing, just, oh, deal with my anger and walk away. But it's also not helpful just to flip your lid and light your head on fire, right? And do you see how that's productive anger of going, okay, how do I work with this? How do I honor what I'm seeing and say it in a helpful way? So that's why we're going to talk about these safe space rules, because we're just sort of saying, here's how we're going to have this conversation. So we're just going to make some agreements to each other. And this goes for the whole series. This goes for group life, when you're hopefully following up on this in group life during the week, and like with your family, wherever you're going, to keep some of these things in mind. So the first kind of guideline for safe space is no shame, blame, or attacks. And do you see how that's what we were talking about during Inside Out? When we're just reactive, when we just sort of smear our suffering onto other people, it shuts them down. How do you feel when somebody jumps on you like that, right? Like, again, you kind of retreat. You're not prone to really be transformed. So, yeah, see reactive anger. Like, that's what it is, and it just shuts people down. So we're not shaming people. We're not blaming people for the misinformation they might carry. We're not attacking people, because that's not going to get us anywhere, and we want to get somewhere. Treat people the way you would want to be treated if you had stepped in it. Because here's the thing, if you feel totally comfortable, we're doing this wrong. Like, if you don't make any little misstep, you're probably not really learning something. And so this takes a lot of vulnerability and risk. And so when you step in it, think about how you would want other people to react to you. And maybe on the other end, extend that same gentleness or graciousness to another person instead of being like, I can't believe you said that. Like, help me understand what you mean by that. Or I wonder if you might hear how that's coming out versus what you said. You know, there are ways to be gentle and generous with each other. And the last thing is that we all have the right to be human, to be inconsistent, to be emotional, to be triggered. And so I wanted to bring back, we had a series this fall called Because It Hurts, where we talked a lot about the comfort zone, the growth zone, and the danger zone. And in our comfort zone, we don't learn a lot. We're just, it's pretty easy, and maybe, oh, that's interesting, or, oh, that's helpful. The danger zone is where we're shut down. We're overwhelmed. Something has triggered us so that we're just in that, like, totally fight or flight mode. But then we want to work on that middle growth zone and making that growth zone a little bigger so that our capacity for these difficult things grows and we're able to handle more and learn more. And I think it's worth asking ourselves, like, is this worth my discomfort? Like, having these conversations, stepping outside of my box, is this worth it? It's also important to have these to set up these guidelines for the conversation, even though this might not feel like it's part of the conversation. It is learning how to do this, because these opportunity moments usually happen when we're stressed, and that's not always the best time to think about something for the first time, right? So if we can do it now while we're a little calm, before we're not reactive, build some of these skills, then hopefully they're there for us when we're in a difficult situation or when we're having a conversation with a family member, something that we don't agree with. So I just want to end this section with a little quote from Verne Myers, and she says this: "The most important thing is adopting the attitude that cultural competence is an important skill to have, and you will do what it takes, including risking embarrassment, to keep moving forward." The most important thing is adopting the attitude that cultural competence is an important skill to have, and you'll do what it takes, including risking embarrassment, to keep moving forward. So our goal through all of this is connection, not perfection. Yes, can I just get like a nod? You don't have to turn and talk to anybody, but is this making sense? So how, you don't yet, communion's coming. But so of saying, you know, I will say, like, when I was like, oh great, I'm doing the first week of Human Race, I was like, all right, upper middle class suburban white girl. Like, I'm the perfect person to start this series, right? I will not get everything right. I have not gotten everything right. But my goal is connection. My goal is expansion. And so that's why we're doing this. And in the spirit of learning and growth. So, yes, are we there? And that goes for this whole series. And so be reminding yourselves, be reminding your group. Like, it might be a great thing at group life to go over some of these, like, safe space things at the start of your group lifetime or in your family. Like, and there are lots of other, these are just three very short sort of guidelines, but there are other things like using I statements of I noticed this instead of you made me feel that, acknowledging emotions, practicing forgiveness, believing in each other's best intentions is really important. Silence is okay. We have actually group life, like, safe space guidelines kind of things. I think we call them something else. Nick helped us rewrite those, and Melissa could tell me what those are. But so this is something that's an important to revisit as a community. Cool. All right, the second thing we need to talk about is our identity. And this is when it starts to get personal. So I want you to write down on your paper, pretend that there's lots of blank space there, and think about, what words do you use to define yourself? So shifting gears from talking about how to talk about it to starting to talk about it. What words do you use to define yourself? And try to think about a variety of different scenarios. So at work or in your family or out in the world, thinking about geography, socioeconomic status, education, gender, militarism, religion, sexual orientation, hobby, traditions, personal history, what generation you are. Take a little time to be curious and reflective of how do I construct myself to other people? We all do it. Thank you. And there might be parts of your identity that you're more comfortable with and less comfortable with in different scenarios. I know I rattled off some words about myself just now about like white and suburban and all of these things and that being my background, but I'll tell you, sometimes pastor is something I lead with and sometimes it isn't. There are a lot of people that don't know that about me because in different contexts, that is more important or less important depending on where I am, right? So think about some of these different things of how you like to be seen versus ones that are harder for you to carry. Two. Because all of these play into making you who you are, which helps determine how you see and understand and react to and judge other people. And none of these are fixed about you or the only thing that's true about you or the most important thing about you. They're just sort of this constellation that generally helps sketch out the shape of you to other people. So let's leave those there. And now this next question. Examine stories you tell yourself about one up and one down. So I'm going to use pastor because it's a pretty neutral thing. There are times when identifying as a pastor kind of gives me this one up status. Not necessarily here, which I like, but other places I go. If I walk into a hospital with a collar on, which I wouldn't do, but if I did, right, people might react to me a little bit differently. Or even if I'm at a wedding and I've been the officiant, people are kind of like, ooh, pastor girl. Like, eesh. But other times, like at a meditation center or a yoga studio, like if I bring that out, people are like, oh, okay. And again, this is totally my perception and that might not be their judgments, but there are scenarios where that puts me in a little bit of a one down place. And so I think this is really helpful language for us to look at what are the ways where I'm one up and what are the ways where I am one down, or my sex of being a woman and my gender identity of being a woman. Like there are times when that is a one down thing. If I'm in a boardroom full of executive men, like I'm going to stick out and feel a little less than because of our cultural stuff that I'm a woman. But there are other scenarios where, like, in a yoga studio, there tend to not be a lot of guys always. And so that can be sort of a one-upping thing of, like, oh, yeah, we're all here and you're in the minority on that. So I think this is really helpful language for us to examine. So look back at some of those words that you have, whether it's about whatever those words were that you wrote down, and notice, what are some stories that I tell myself where I feel a little one up, and what are some where I feel a little one down? Because no one is in a completely one up or one down group. We're kind of a mix of all of these things. And again, none of these are fixed ideas, and they're all really contextual. Another example that I like to use is I have a very, very able body, and I'm very grateful for that. And generally, in society, that puts me in a one-up position that I often don't even realize. But when I go to teach adaptive yoga, I'm in a one-down because they know so many things, and their PCAs, often with these young adults, have so much more fluency in this that I don't have. And so I become a one-down because of my fully able-bodiedness. So again, our goal is never to say this is good, that is bad, to be dividing the world, but to be really aware of when we have unearned advantages and when we don't. And I know it's easy to take a lot of those for granted. I very rarely have to think about physical accessibility of spaces for myself. And that's huge. And so what I hope we start to cultivate this week is starting to examine some of those unearned advantages that we have, starting to look at, oh, isn't it interesting? One of my biggest unearned advantages because of my race is the ability of choosing to talk about race or not. Like, if we weren't doing this series, would I be having to have these conversations all the time? Maybe with my family when the Black Lives Matter thing is happening over Thanksgiving and you're like, oh, they're shutting down the mall, and you know, you sort of have that. And then I get to forget about it. Talk about an unearned advantage, right? Like, that's amazing. I hope we start to build an awareness of that this week. And one thing that I want to say about that and these unearned advantages, and you'll hear me using those words instead of white privilege or privilege or that kind of stuff, because I think that just puts a little knot in the tummies of some of us. John Powell's like, it's like having a party that kind of bombs and then like inviting people back. Like when you just like go on about white privilege, and then he's like, it's a party that, like, isn't that fun? And then you're like, hey, you want to come back to my party? And they're like, I think I'm busy that night. Like, I just can't make it. You know, so, but that's the discomfort. We should be a little uncomfortable. But there's this great local diversity trainer and consultant named Andre Cohen, and he has this great line, and he says, these things are not your fault, but now they're your responsibility. Now that you know them, now that you start to acknowledge them, and that's not on your outline because things happen between Thursday and Sunday, so bear with me. It's not your fault, but now it's your responsibility. And to me, that is a real undertone for this whole conversation for us. So now you're done learning about your identity, right? No. That's what the homework practice will be. So let's dig into race. We need to talk about our race. So this is where I am going to solicit a little bit of feedback from you guys. So this sentence, maybe you've heard it like, I don't see race. Or you hear people say like, I don't see you as black. I don't see you as Latino. So what is unhelpful about that? I'm already tipping my hand at what I think about it. But can you guys, a little interactive, like what's unhelpful about that sentence or that sentiment? Yeah, because you do, right. Jane Elliott would say, even somebody saying, like, I don't see you as black. Well, they just called you black, so clearly they do. Like, yeah, they do. Yeah, they do, and you are. What are some other things that are unhelpful about that sentiment?
Race is part of identity.
Race is part of identity, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, that erasure is not a solution. I've been thinking about it this week, like, if I said to Chris, our musician, like, Chris, I don't see you as a musician, I just see you as a person. And you're like, well, actually, that's a big part of who I am and how I understand myself and how I interact with the world. And or if I said to you parents, like, I don't see you as parents, ugh, those tiny humans, who needs them? I just see you as people. And you're like, but, like, my kids and my family are really important to me, right? Like, I put a lot of time into that, and that is a big part of making me who I am. And so it sounds silly. We laugh when I say, I don't see you as a parent. I don't see you as a musician. But we hear people say all the time, like, I don't see race. But we don't giggle at that, right? And it's like to erase that part of who someone is really unfair. And so I think we've gone kind of as far as we can with the colorblind myth. I think from what I understand, like in the 90s and stuff, it was much more like, oh yeah, we're in this colorblind society, everybody's equal. We found out that doesn't work. There have been studies for like kids and parents who said they were very like in their home, they tried to say that and espouse all these values and stuff, and then they take these implicit bias tests and they're exactly the same as their parents. And so just because the first family is, you know, our president is half black, does not mean that we're in some post-racial society. And so I think the damaging thing is that often colorblindness is an excuse to deny unearned advantages, to ignore things that hurt to recognize, to let inequality go unchecked, or to ignore the place that race holds in shaping our identities. So we hopefully now, let's just be done, can agree that we need to let go of the assumption that seeing race is a bad thing. So instead, maybe sort of counterintuitively, let's say, like, start seeing race. Race is not a biological fact. They can't find any gene or DNA strand or anything that makes us, it's some melanin in your skin? Yeah, melanin, that's what it is. Melanin in your skin, same that determines your eye color, right? So it's not a biological fact, but it's absolutely a social reality. It's a neutral but very real thing that holds a lot of power in our culture right now. And the other piece of this is that race is not monolithic. There's a great clip that I'm going to show you from Jamila Liscott, And it's like a 4.5 minute TED Talk, and you have to watch it this week. We'll put it on Facebook, the group life, I get all of that. We don't have time to watch the whole thing, but we're going to watch the first minute, but please go watch this today. Because she does a really good job of showing us that, like, blackness is not just one thing. Like, oh, that's that. And neither is whiteness, and we'll get to that. But let's see Jamila talk about this, because she just does an amazing job.
Today, a baffled lady observed the shell where my soul dwells and announced that I'm articulate, which means that when it comes to enunciation and diction, I don't even think of it because I'm articulate. So when my professor asks a question and my answer is tainted with the connotation of urbanized suggestion, there's no misdirected intention. Pay attention because I'm articulate. So when my father asks, what kind of thing is this? My articulate answer never goes amiss. I say, Father, this is the impending problem at hand. And when I'm on the block, I switch it up just because I can. So when my boy says, what's good with you, son? I say, I just fall out with them people, but I done. And sometimes in class, I might pause the intellectual sound and flow to ask, yo, why these books never be about my peoples? Yes, I have decided to treat all three of my languages as equal because I'm articulate.
So please watch that little TED Talk. But I think she does a really good job of showing us that we can't assume that, oh, I see her skin color, and so she's black, and that's what that means. And I know some black people, and I read the Black Lives Matter website, and I'm very culturally fluent, and she's black. Like, she's like, I even have three languages that I speak that are all this. And so to say, races are not monolithic. And so we have to start to tease out the differences and come at it again with this openness. And the other interesting piece here is that whiteness isn't one thing either. As we saw in identity, there are lots of things that make up who we are. And that these are constantly evolving and changing and defining and redefining who we are. And whiteness does not have a monolithic history. So I was telling one of my uncles about this up at the cabin. He said, hey, have you ever seen the book Bring Warm Clothes? It was sitting on our coffee table. Has anyone seen this book? Okay, all right, we have some hands. I'm going to read you a couple wonderful pieces from our state's history. There are a lot of post-its in here. I should have found the right ones. Okay. So this is, this guy is mad because Scandinavians were not nominated for local office. It is a shame that our newspapers won't take up this thing, but they are, in the most cases, Republican and presumably ruled by the Irish rings and content themselves with quiet agreement or even in some cases defend the party for its shoddy treatment of Scandinavians. Are our countrymen going to stand for such treatment? Are the Swedes going to vote for those Irish bums forever? This is from a paper in 1892. Are the Swedes going to vote for those Irish bums forever? Those bums who openly and boastingly everywhere refer to the Scandinavians as voting cattle? When a political party for which its very existence in Minnesota depends upon the Scandinavians treats them in such a manner, then it is simply our countrymen's duty to chastise the bullies at the ballot box. Okay, interesting. Then a couple pages later, this is another one. Horace Smith, writing to his family in 1901. 9/10 of the men are roundheads, just immigrants, and the most disgusty, dirty, lousy reprobates that I ever saw. I kicked one last week and kicked him bad, and I get so mad sometimes I could whip a dozen if I had to. There are probably 15 white men here to 60 Swedes. And those 15 keep them down so they don't dare to say their soul is their own. Every time a Swede gets gay, in the old sense of the word, he is promptly squelched and is done so quick and decisively that he don't try it again. This is an Irish guy, by the way. It's just so interesting to me that 100 years ago, Swedish people weren't considered white. Right? There are 15 white men here, and the rest are Swedes. that's so interesting. Like, I have family that I, you know, like my grandparents' parents, that was probably their reality. And so just to say, our differences are what make us who we are. And so even though people might share a complexion, like, that does not mean that they share a history or a culture. And whiteness doesn't mean one thing either. And we need to start talking about what whiteness means. I was having a conversation last night, and my friend was joking, like, oh, yeah, they told us that at, like, the secret brown people meeting that we have. Like, you know, we have these meetings, and they tell us all these things about you. And I was like, white people don't need to have those meetings because we just watch TV. Like, it's so normative for us. John Powell talks about whiteness like being the narrator in a third-person story. Like, it's the only thing you're listening to, but you forget to pay attention to it. And so we need to start talking about the ways that our race and the ways whiteness, even if it's not our race, are informing so much of the culture. And so building that awareness in ourselves is really important. And so this last fill-in is from a movie by Jane Elliott called The Angry Eye. She was a social scientist and researcher who did the blue eye, brown eye experiment. Maybe you've heard of it. See if you can catch the fill-in from this clip. But she just, this is the mic drop moment. I can't say it better than this.
Imagination. We live in different realities, but when you deny what this person is going through, or what this person is going through, you're denying their reality. We are different on the outside. Are you not the same on the inside?
We're both loving people, we're good souls, but we're not.
No, have you ever been pregnant?
No.
So are you and I the same on the inside?
No.
No, absolutely. Are you and I the same on the inside? Absolutely. Are our psychologies the same? No, the psychology of whites is not the same as the psychology of blacks, or Native Americans, or Latinos, or Asian Americans. Male psychology isn't the same as female psychology. The psychology of the young isn't the same as the psychology of the old. We are as different on the inside as we are on the outside, and we have the right to be so. People don't deny differences. Accept them, appreciate them, recognize them, and cherish them. They are extremely important.
Yeah, you can clap for her. That was, she's, and that, there's a whole, like, movie on YouTube, a whole, like, 50-minute movie. So don't deny differences. Accept them. Appreciate them. Recognize them. Cherish them. They are extremely important. If that's the only thing you get out of today, that will be enough. Our differences are what make us who we are. That's just the fact of the matter. And the more that we can start to be aware of our identity and how we move through the world and how that may or may not be colored by race, how it probably is, even if we don't pay a lot of attention to it. And then being sensitive about starting to have some of those conversations and moving into that place with others. I want to say, too, that we're not having this three-week series so that we check the box. We're done. Okay, we talked about race. Right? Like, I hope we're never done with this. But I hope that we start to learn how to do this better. And so at the end, in that blue box, I'm going to take this opportunity to put some words in your mouth. So I'm going to have you repeat after me, but you can fill it in first. I know I have a limited lens. I know I don't have all the experiences. I actually want to learn and be corrected. When we're willing to risk our self-image, to say something we're not totally sure about if it's okay to say when we get that little pit in the stomach, that's great. And if we come from the place of, I actually want to learn and be corrected, can you help me? When we're having these conversations, it's so great. So are you ready for a little repeat after me? Okay. I know I have a limited lens. I know I don't have all the experiences. I actually want to learn and be corrected. We are never going to get comfortable with this without being uncomfortable. You have to go through the discomfort to get to the comfort level. How are you expected to have worked through things you've never experienced, right? And so this is us learning how to work through them. So I'm really grateful for that, that we've started this conversation. And now I hope that we're going to have communion together. And before I tell you the nuts and bolts of it, let me tell you the why of it. This is one of those, like, step up to the table. Like, this is your moment to be like, we're not all the same, but we're not separate. Like, we are brought together by this thing. This is our connection to one another. Jesus as somebody that drew us into really real relationships, and I think that's the strength of Jacob's Well is, I mean, you see on that board, pretty much everybody's writing, like, community. The people that bring me here, the people that I encounter here. So this is a chance to encounter one another in very real, meaningful ways. I want to say one other thing about this bread. It's a little different. We usually get our bread from Turtle Bread for free, which we love them for. But yesterday, I went to Midtown Global Market and got as many different types of bread as I could find. So we have tortillas, we have chapati, we have Russian black bread, we have sourdough from Salty Tart, we have some allergen-free, like, root vegetable chips up at this center table, if that is something that you need. So it was a really interesting experiment, and I also got to tell people what I was doing. I had to tell people I was a pastor, And that in itself was a whole different experiment of who was really like, oh, yeah, here, just have it for free, or maybe a dollar, or like, no, no discount. I'm like, okay. I'll just buy the chips, thanks. Anyways, but this is meant to say, like, even how the normative thing of, oh, this is the bread we always have. But this is the diversity that exists in one building, you know, a mile from us. So let that be part of this diversity. How we do communion here with Jacob's Well was very disorienting to me when I was new. So if you're new, let me help you out. And if you're not, help the new people out. We don't, like, line up and have one person serving things. It's very much this free-for-all, but like a dinner party. Like, you walk in and you just start, like, munching on stuff, and you're like, oh, hey, did you get some of this? Did you get some of that? So just go to a table that's close to you when I say so. I see you moving already, but hold on. There are five different stations. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So move to a table near you. Start munching. Linger a little bit. I think the first time I was here, I, like, took my bread and sat down. And Matt and Andrea did the same thing. And we were like, oh, we're supposed to talk. Okay. Well, you new here too? Yeah, it's good to meet you. Do you remember this, guys? I vividly remember this. So if you're an introvert and you're new, which is like a double whammy, which is, I think, what was happening for us, there will be other people sitting down that you can talk to. But you're welcome to kind of linger around. The band's going to play some music. These guys are showing us you can serve yourself wine or grape juice. And then can you point to where your black cups go? Or your cups go in the black container. Hey, great. That plastic container is for your cups when you're done. So it's messy and great, and remember how you were all chatting during the hello time and I couldn't get you to be quiet? Do that again, but I'm not going to try to wrangle you back as much. All right, ready? Communion.